Chair Anglia?
Here.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Wilt Beltran?
Here.
Ranking Democrat Member Silvers?
Here.
Representatives Barnaby?
Here.
Brown?
Yes, here.
Bailey?
Here.
DeSegley?
Here.
Fabricio?
Here.
Geller is excused. Haig?
Here.
Lotvalla?
Here.
Maggard?
Here.
McClure?
Here.
Nixon? Umphroy? Clayken? Placencia?
Here.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Here.
Schoaf?
Here.
Schlotzberg?
Here.
Tomco?
Here.
Wilhite?
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that a quorum is present. Members, please make sure you're taking your seats. Members, to start off today, I'm going to let you all know that it is my my intention to temporarily postpone CS for House Bill 273 by Rep. Clayken regarding motor vehicle insurance coverage exclusions. At this point, we're going to move into our first bill. Leader Grant is going to present HB 895, expiration of permits and agreements during natural emergencies. You are recognized to explain the bill. Is that on for him?
Yeah, if I can, this on. Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members. HB 0859, expiration of permits and agreements during natural emergencies. The bill provides for flexibility and additional time to adapt to the changing economic conditions caused by COVID-19. It clarifies current law to provide that the expiration of a local development agreement under Florida Local Government Agreement Act may be tolled after the end of the declaration of a state of emergency for a natural disaster, which is issued by the government and by the governor, and the length of time will be the emergency plus 6 months. And it allows for a consumptive use permit's expiration date to be tolled when a declaration of a state of emergency for a natural disaster is declared by the governor, and it provides retroactivity back to March 1st of 2020, and that is the bill.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions of the bill sponsor? Any questions of the bill sponsor? Showing none, is there any public testimony on this? There is. Jeffrey Woodburn, Associated Industries of Florida, waiving its support. Showing no other public testimony, members, we are in debate. In debate on the bill before us. Showing no debate, you are recognized.
Wave close.
Having waived close, a question now occurs on House Bill 895. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee, yes. Wilt Beltran?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
DeSegley?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller is excused. Haig?
Yes.
Lotvalla?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure? McClure? Nixon?
Yes.
Umphroy? Clayken?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Schlotzberg?
Yes.
Tomco?
Yes.
Wilhite?
Yes.
Chair Anglia?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, show that House Bill 895 reported favorably.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Leader. Members, we're going to go into PCS for CS for House Bill 15 by Rep. Clemens regarding sales and use tax. You are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. We're explaining the HB 15 first, or are you going into the PCB?
Let's go, let's explain House Bill 15. Let's get the explanations and questions out of the way, and then we'll go directly into the amendments in the order.
Thank you, sir. CS for HB 15 has two primary purposes. This is modernizing our tax code. We are one of only two states in the nation that hasn't modernized our tax code, and moving the burden from the purchaser to the point of sale or the merchandise seller. This bill would help to do that. It takes the sellers of the product in Florida that sells their product on the internet marketplace, and it levels the playing field also. Our local businesses in Florida are currently, if they have an internet marketplace presence, they're collecting sales tax and remitting them to 42 other states that require the collection of sales tax, and this levels the field. Basically, that's the bill, underlying bill, Mr. Chairman.
All right, just give me one second, everybody. Okay, members, and excuse me there, Rep. Members, I need everyone to listen. This is important. So there was a mislabeling of the bill number on the last bill. So when I called for the roll call for 895 when it was supposed to be 859. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back to that bill on a roll call after we complete this bill. I just wanted to make everybody aware that we're going to go back and we're going to recall the roll on 859, Leader Grant's bill, to make sure that we're going through the appropriate process. Okay? So, having explained the bill, are there any questions of the bill sponsor on PCS for CS for House Bill 15? Any questions of the bill sponsor? No questions? Showing no questions, we are going to go into the amendments. So, Rep. Nixon, you are recognized to explain Amendment 1.
Thank you, Chair. So in regards to the amendment, the bill sponsors just pointed out that they want to modernize the tax code. And so I think it's important, since we are modernizing the tax code and opening up the statutes around the unemployment system, I think it's important for us to modernize the unemployment system. Right now, less than 10% of Florida's workers qualify for unemployment benefits. Instituting an alternative base period will expand access to these critical benefits to a fifth of currently ineligible workers. And so this base period would allow more workers to actually qualify for benefits by updating the system for tracking an individual's recent earnings, which are needed by many of the workers to satisfy the state's monetary eligibility rules. And why shouldn't the workers' most recent earnings count towards their unemployment benefits? Members, you've seen this issue in your districts where workers were laid off due to no fault of their own, and they couldn't access their unemployment benefits. And also in 2019, 43 states, again, I repeat, 43 states, including DC, adopted alternative base periods. And I believe it's about time, again, to modernize this based on computerization of the system. This is a common sense amendment to make sure workers have what is theirs. And I would urge my colleagues to vote up on this amendment.
Haven't explained the amendment. Members, any questions on Amendment 1? Any questions on Amendment 1? Showing no questions. This is on Amendment 1? Okay. Public testimony. Karen Woodall, Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy, waiving in support. And Richard Templin, Florida AFL-CIO, a proponent of the bid. Bills. I do not see Mr. Templin. Is that all we have on Amendment 1? Members, any debate on the amendment? Any debate? Showing no debate, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I think it's time to modernize our unemployment system along with what the speaker, the bill sponsors were stating. Using an alternative base still requires that the state's wage thresholds should be met and other conditions of eligibility. It simply allows, again, the worker to count his or her most recent quarter of work in determining eligibility. And remember, 43 other states are doing this already, and Florida is unfortunately behind the ball in terms of that. And so I would like us to get on the same course as those other 43 states. So please, please, please vote up on this amendment.
Having closed on the amendment, members, all in favor of adoption of the amendment signify by saying aye. Any opposed? No?
No.
Show the amendment fails. Rep. Nixon, you are recognized to explain Amendment 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment 2, which is weekly benefits increase, no one can live off $32 or $275 a week. So how on earth is someone supposed to find a new job when you can't afford your bills, you can't feed your kids, you can't pay for the internet to apply for jobs, you can't pay for gas to go to your interviews? And so the current system is seemingly set up for Floridians to fail. My amendment would simply increase weekly unemployment benefits from $100 to $400 a week. There's already bipartisan support in the Senate on this effort of increasing the weekly benefits. And so I think we should go ahead and increase it to 400. The national average is 368. That's still not enough, but it is in fact a compromise. And I would urge my colleagues to vote up on this amendment.
Having explained Amendment 2, members, any questions on Amendment 2? Rep. Romlin, questions.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Rep. Nixon, for bringing this amendment. Even in today's environment, you know, post-COVID or current COVID condition at 4.6% unemployment in the state of Florida, if we increase these benefits, what would that cost the taxpayers of Florida?
For a response.
I'll actually have to get those numbers right back to you in regards to that. But again, this increasing these benefits, it's allowing workers to get back to work, right? So again, it's super hard right now for workers to live off the 275, let alone go out and find those jobs that they are required to go look after, let alone pay for the internet, which will allow them to help search for those jobs that we're trying to get them to get back onto. And so, but I can get that information to you at another time.
Another follow-up? Any other questions of the amendment sponsor on Amendment 2? Any other questions? Showing none, I have a couple of appearance cards. Richard Templin, Florida AFL-CIO, is a proponent of the bill. Karen Woodall, Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy, waving in support. I see no other public testimony. Members, we're in debate. In debate on Amendment 2. Rep. Romlin, in debate.
Thank you, Chairman. And Rep. Nixon, you know, I agree with you. It's probably very difficult to live on $275 a week, but it's probably difficult to live on $400 a week. But if we're going to ask Floridians to possibly raise taxes on them, I think that we need to know that number up front. So, members, I encourage you to vote down on this amendment.
Any further debate? Any further debate? Showing none, Rep. Nixon, you are recognized to close on Amendment 2.
Again, this is simply a safety net for the most critical folks who need it. You know, Florida's always, we're always talking about we're open for business, and we need to support not only those small business owners and big businesses, but we should also support the workers that keep those businesses running. And so at this time, you know, these workers are hard hit, and they're trying to get back to work to help keep businesses running here in the state of Florida. So I would really urge, again, there is bipartisan support to increase the amount of benefits available for workers who have been laid off on the Senate side. Let's go ahead and do it on the House side as well. And please vote up on this amendment.
Having closed on Amendment 2, all in favor of adoption of Amendment 2 signify by saying aye. Any opposed, nay?
Nay.
Show the amendment fails. Rep. Nixon, you are recognized to explain Amendment 3.
Ooh. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this amendment would increase the weeks to match national standards. Previously in the state of Florida, we had weeks that were up to 26. That is currently the national standard. However, my amendment wouldn't even increase it to 26. It would only double it to 24. So that in and of itself is a compromise. So I would urge, again, my colleagues to increase the weeks to match national standards by doubling our weeks from 12 to 24 and removing this arbitrary formula that denies Floridians this critical safety net.
Members, any questions on Amendment 3? Any questions on Amendment 3? Rep. Plakin, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nixon, the current equation, I don't remember the exact details, but has, I want to say, 12 weeks to scaling up to 24 or 26. So before the pandemic, we were at 2.8% unemployment. Do we really need 24 weeks when 2.8 is really full employment? Wouldn't keeping a scale like this be better?
For a response.
I think we should go up to 24 weeks because, you know, look at what happened, right? I've been receiving phone calls from my constituents. I'm seeing things on social media. I'm quite sure a lot of you all have received phone calls and stating that the 12 weeks just simply is not enough. And one of the reasons I think that people stop applying for benefits because the system was broken. And so this is an attempt to correct that. And so again, I would urge my colleagues to vote up on this amendment.
Further questions? You okay, Rep? Rep Romulan, questions.
Thank you, Chairman, and my good friend, Rep. Nixon, a similar question to the last amendment. If we're going to vote on a possible tax increase, if we increase benefits from 12 weeks to 24 weeks in the state that has the lowest unemployment in the nation per capita, what would that cost us?
For a response.
I would have to get those numbers back to you, but I don't even look at this as a tax increase. I mean, we have to think of it as the workers actually paying these online sales taxes. Why not allow this money to help them when they are critically in need and allowing them to get the opportunity to help them to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, right? Like, and to get to work, help them get the opportunity to pay for their internet, to pay for gas, to keep their lights on, to keep food on their table. And I think this is something that's needed. We are still in a global pandemic. I still get calls every day as it relates to constituents who are in need of some assistance, who are oftentimes having to go to soup kitchens, oftentimes having to go go try to find clothes for their kids, and they are paying into a system that they are not allowed to access if we don't adopt some of these amendments. And so for that reason alone, again, I ask my colleagues to vote up on this amendment.
Members, any further questions on Amendment 3? Showing none, we are in public testimony. Karen Woodall, Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy, waves in support. Richard Templin, Florida AFL-CIO, a proponent of the bill. Showing no further public testimony, members, we are in debate. In debate on Amendment 3 by Rep. Nixon. Rep. Plakin, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, I believe it's 12 weeks at where we were at 2.8, and I think it goes over 10% unemployment, it gets somewhere near the 24 weeks. I don't remember the exact numbers. So I would suggest that if we have very high unemployment, it could go more than 24 weeks. But to have a one-size-fits-all, depending on what the unemployment rate is, I don't think makes a whole lot of sense. So I would urge everybody to vote down on the amendment.
Rep. Wilhite, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I think we can all agree, and I hate to say this word unprecedented, but we are, okay? It's there. But it doesn't matter if we have the lowest unemployment rate in the nation or if it's or what number it is. You know, we're here to look out for every Floridian. And the fact is I think we did have and proved that we had a bit of a failure of our system and our unemployment system here this last year. And so I think no matter what it is, I think we have an obligation to look out for every worker, whether it's the lowest or the highest rate in the nation. So I applaud you for bringing this information forward, Representative, and talking about the conversation, because I think if we don't look out for every single Floridian, we're failing as a body, because we are supposed to look out for every single person. Nobody chooses usually to be on unemployment, especially during these times. And so I think it's good that we talk about more of this, and I appreciate you bringing these amendments forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further debate? Any further debate? Showing none, Rep. Nixon, you are recognized to close on Amendment 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Florida's unemployment insurance system is pretty much a national disgrace. It provides benefits to the least amount of people, and for the few who qualify, they are afforded some of the lowest benefits and the shortest benefits period of any state. We all saw the system collapsed during this pandemic, and that was by design. In 2011, the Florida legislature gutted the system, including benefits, in order to keep premiums paid by big businesses the lowest in the nation. Giant corporations got a handout. Meanwhile, working people, working class folks, the constituents who are constantly calling us and emailing us, suffered. Now we're doubling down and trying to do that again. House Bill 15 seeks to begin collecting sales taxes on internet transactions. This could be a positive because Florida needs the revenue for social safety net programs and other needs. But the bill will give that new revenue upwards of $1 billion to big corporations to keep our meager unemployment insurance premiums the same as they have been for two decades, with no increases in eligibility or in benefits for unemployed workers. Again, working families will be forced to pay for the unemployment system that has failed them and that there is nothing in it for them. Shouldn't the people paying the taxes get something back? This is a big corporate bailout with nothing for working class families, nothing for our constituents who are constantly emailing and calling us about their benefits. For that reason alone, colleagues, I am urging you all and asking you all to please vote up on this amendment. Thank you.
Having closed on the amendment, all in favor of adoption of Amendment 3 by Rep. Nixon, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay. No.
Show the amendment fails. Members, we're going to move on to Amendment 4 by Rep. Tomko. You are recognized.
Thank you. This amendment provides that once the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund has been replenished to its pre-pandemic level, that the business rent tax will be reduced from 5.5% to 2%. And that is the amendment.
Members, any questions of the amendment sponsor, Rep. Rommel, in questions?
Thank you, Chairman. This is my lucky day, all these great amendments. Representative, do we estimate that this will make the bill revenue neutral then?
You are recognized.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any further questions of the amendment sponsor? Okay, showing none. Do we have any public testimony on the amendment? None. Members, we are in debate. In debate on the amendment. Amendment 4, Rep. Tomko. Rep. Nixon, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a small business owner, so I will vote up on this amendment. However, I do want to just uplift the fact that, again, this amendment is only supporting small business owners, and the amendments that I offered up previously would have supported workers, and I just want to put that on record. Thank you.
Any further debate? Rep. Rommel, in debate.
Thank you, Chairman. Not to hog the microphone, but Rep. Nixon, I want to let you know, though, 60% of all jobs in Florida are created by small businesses. And as a small business owner myself that has definitely been affected by this pandemic, relieving ourselves of some of this high rent tax that we pay will do a great job at helping us keep our employees and employing people in the future. And anytime we have a chance to make a new revenue source, a revenue neutral, help some folks, it's great for Florida, and I encourage everybody to vote up on this.
Any further debate? Any further debate? Just, you know, real quick, I know that Rep. Rommel had asked a question about revenue neutral. I just want to, you know, state that this is a tax. It's a fairness issue. Obviously, it's something that we should have been collecting for a while. So, you know, while we use the words revenue neutral. It's a collection issue, and I appreciate the work done on the amendment by Rep. Tomko, and I'll save my debate for the greater bill at large. So with that, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close.
Having waived close, all in favor of adoption of Amendment 4 by Rep. Tomko, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Show the amendment adopted. Members, we are back on the bill as amended. Any questions of the bill sponsor on the bill as amended? Any questions? Showing none, we have public testimony. Brewster Beavis, Associated Industries of Florida, waiving in support. Gregory Black, International Council of Shopping Centers, waiving in support. Carol Bracey, Amazon.com, waiving in support. Amber Hughes, Florida League of Cities, waiving in support. Daniel David, Florida Association of Professional Employer Organizations, waiving in support. Christopher Rose, Libertarian Party of Florida, an opponent of the bill. You want to speak on the bill? Head to the podium.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Rose, representing the Libertarian Party of Florida. Right now, the people of Florida are free to transverse state lines, purchase goods or services, and bring those items back to their residence independent of paying Florida sales tax. Sir. Why? Because the items were not sold.
I need you to put your mask on, please.
Very well. Why? Because these items were not sold in Florida. We advocate that these same people have the right to virtually cross those same state lines via web browsing and voluntarily contract with a third-party company to bring those items back for them. The same rule about sales tax should apply here as well because the items were not sold in Florida. Let's be clear on what this bill is, representatives, the largest tax hike in our lifetimes. This tax increase will be borne by the people you represent and claim to protect. This bill is touted as an aid to brick-and-mortar businesses in our state. We need to level the playing field, I've been told. We submit that the biggest detriment to local small businesses is the ever-growing number of rules and regulations currently adopted by this legislature. If you want to level the playing field, level the wall of roadblocks that exist to do business in this state. This bill is also touted as necessary to adapt and overcome the losses and setbacks from the coronavirus pandemic. We further submit that a significant loss in this pandemic was not just the virus itself, but the setback of freedom for which government played the largest role, demonstrated in part by the draconian restrictions burdened upon the economy by this government. This bill is further part of a state budget this year, which is approaching $100 billion. We reject the notion that a budget this massive is not worthy of 1% of it being reappropriated, reallocated, condensed, curtailed, or cut away entirely. Ronald Reagan once said, quote, that the problem is not that the people are taxed too little, the problem is that the government spends too much. And in this case, we agree with his sentiments. The Libertarian Party of Florida is proud to stand in opposition to House Bill 15. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Jake Farmer, Florida Retail. Yep, sir. Sir, we have a question for you. Rep. Will Hyten, questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, sir, for your testimony. I'm just wondering, if you bought a car in North Carolina and brought it to the state of Florida, you're saying that you would not have to pay the sales tax when you brought it into the state?
You are recognized for a response.
I wasn't aware you could buy a car on Amazon, Mr. Representative.
Rep.
Mr. Chairman?
Yep.
We do have, there are programs now where you can buy cars and have them delivered to you, so I would say that that is factually, you still could buy something online. It's called Carvana is an example of that.
You are recognized for any response, even though that wasn't really a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Representative, I appreciate the question, and I would submit that your original question demonstrates why this bill is not currently necessary, because you already have to pay sales tax on a vehicle that if I go up there, I actually have bought a car in North Carolina. And yes, I had to pay sales tax on it when I got it back. this bill is not necessary in that regard. What this bill will do will cause my wife and children, when they grow up, to have to pay taxes on the smallest of items that are currently distributed right now for free.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll debate.
All right. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Jake Farmer, Florida Retail Federation. Waiving in support. Thank you, sir. H. Brown, Florida Chamber of Commerce. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be very brief. French Brown on behalf of the Florida Chamber of Commerce. Just wanted to highlight a couple things with respect to the testimony that was just had. So Florida sales tax for a long time, ever since it was created in the 50s, has had a use tax component. And just to assure everybody on the committee, that use tax component applies to any property that is either purchased in Florida that the tax isn't paid, or if it's purchased from out of state and it's imported into the state and used in Florida, that use tax applies. I'd also like the committee to know that since the mid-80s, Florida sales and use tax law has had provisions that allowed the state to go after remote purchasers to the full extent of the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Now, up until 2018, that was always limited by the U.S. Supreme Court to a physical presence test. In the Wayfair versus North Dakota case in 2018, the U.S. Supreme Court came back and essentially reversed 50 years of precedent, which was a pretty significant change. That's what's led to this bill today in front of you. And what this bill does is it provides those small business protections for the out-of-state companies. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court said was so important, and that's what this bill does. It provides those protections. The other thing I just note, this is protecting your Florida small businesses, because your Florida small businesses are currently having to deal with these same types of laws that have been passed in 43 of 45 other states that have a sales tax. Florida and Missouri are the only two states that haven't passed it, and Missouri is right on our heels, and they're looking to pass something this session too. So really what you're doing, this is about fairness to Florida small businesses. And I'll also just add, and just to note what the chairman had a very good comment earlier, this is not a revenue, this is not a tax increase. These are taxes that have always been due. It's just an enforcement collection mechanism. It streamlines it. The other thing that is also protects outside small businesses, because when they use the marketplaces through this legislation, they don't have to separately register and remit to the state if they don't have enough substantial transactions. I'd also like to say that the chamber fully supports the language in the PCS related to the reemployment system. That was a very real issue that we brought to the attention of many members. And that's gonna help Florida small businesses continue to retain employees and to hire new employees, because that's what we need to be doing right now. We don't need to be adding new taxes for every employee that a business owns. And I'd also like to say that we've obviously long supported the business rent tax, so we're happy to see that being added to the bill today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ida Escamani, Florida Rising. You're a recognized Rep. Escamani. I meant Ida.
It's the second time that's happened to me today, Chair. Thank you, Chair and members. We do, on behalf of Florida Rising, we're a racial and economic justice organization. We do oppose this bill as currently written. We would have supported had Rep. Nixon's amendments been adopted, and we do appreciate the representative bringing those forward. I apologize for not getting our card in on time to support those. Members, this bill is costing taxpayers. It is increasing, it's collecting online sales tax in an increasingly digital world. And instead of investing in general revenue or using those dollars for an overall reduction in the sales tax in Florida, we're using it to pay the unemployment insurance and now the business rent tax. We're not targeting this relief. We're giving it to some of the most profitable businesses in Florida. At the same time, this legislature is discussing reducing the Affordable Housing Trust Fund by 66%. While the vast majority of unemployed Floridians don't qualify for unemployment in this state, receive some of the lowest weekly benefits for the shortest duration of time compared to the rest of the nation. Members, I don't need to remind any of you of the unemployment crisis. You've all done incredible work in your districts to serve those vulnerable workers. And we know unemployment is not a handout. It's a tool to combat chronic unemployment. And yet now, those consumers, those same consumers, are being asked to now effectively pay an online tax. We know it's not been collected, but for your pocketbook, those are new dollars that folks will be having to pay. And those dollars are not going back to consumers. They're going to the business unemployment insurance and the business rent tax. We don't see this, members, as tax fairness. We see tax fairness as, if we're going to close a consumer tax loophole, we should also close those corporate tax loopholes as well. And, you know, we see this as a constant trend of privatizing those profits while socializing those risks. And ultimately, we do ask that you oppose this bill. If we're going to be collecting taxes from consumers, we should put those dollars back into the pockets of those consumers. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert McKee, Florida Association of Counties, a proponent of the bill. Karen Woodall, Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy, waiving in opposition. Richard Templin, Florida AFL-CIO, an opponent of the bill. Okay, showing no more public testimony. Members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Rep. Placencia in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clemens, I want to thank you for carrying this bill. I remember seeing this issue come up when I ran for office for the first time in 2014, and I supported it then, and I support it now. And just to paint a picture of why, one of the reasons I think it's important, I want to talk about one of the small businesses in the city of Orlando. In 1977, John and Betsy Hughes started Track Shack, a small little mom-and-pop shoe store for the running community, and it has thrived since that time, and they have meant so much to our community. They created a foundation that has given money to youth athletic teams from the elementary school through the high school level. They've been the first to come and help our kids when we had children whose houses might have burned down and they lost everything and they were on a track team or a cross-country team and they needed clothes to go to practice the next day. They have been an integral part of our community in the city of Orlando. I know the family very well. And I know that this is a very important bill for them. They often tell me that people will come into their store, they'll try on shoes, they'll go home, they'll buy them online, and they'll avoid paying the taxes. This hurts their business. This hurts a lot of small businesses in our state. And this bill that you are moving through this legislature is going to help save a lot of these small businesses. So I thank you on behalf of myself and the entire small business community in the city of Orlando.
Rep. Rommel in debate.
Thank you, Chairman and Representative. Thank you so much for working with me. You know, I'm so surprised to hear that some people are actually opposed to this bill. It's not often, you know, us as legislators. To me, I look at this bill as almost a billion-dollar tax reduction. 60% of all jobs in Florida come from small businesses like myself and others even smaller. And, you know, it's truly remarkable, even in a COVID state, that we're going to have the ability to reduce taxes, encourage job growth, encourage employment, encourage reinvestment of business capital, and it's really targeted at the smallest business without, you know, costing, you know, anything else. I know we heard things that we could help, but this is helping small businesses, it's helping job growth, and to me, from the estimate, it's about a $1 billion tax reduction. Just because now Floridians are going to pay, you know, what they're supposed to be paying under current law. So I appreciate you working with all the stakeholders, and, you know, now we won't have to hear about the rent, commercial rent tax, you know, again either. But so thank you.
Rep. Plakin in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, thanks to Representative Clemens for bringing this bill. I know that there's been a lot in the media about it, pluses and minuses, so I appreciate your fortitude in moving this forward. Like Representative Placencia said, when we started in 2015, this was around then. So I'm glad that, God willing, this will get solved. But, you know, you probably hear out in culture these days, people say, my truth. Like there's my truth and your truth all of a sudden. But in talking about the representative from the Libertarian Party, seems to be his truth is that this is a tax increase. But that's not the truth. And the only thing that counts is the truth. I know that's forgotten these days sometimes in our culture. But the truth is it's not a tax increase. It's simply an enforcement mechanism to help people pay the tax that they owe. So in terms of the amendment by Representative Tomkow, I got one word to describe that. That's brilliant to the way that mechanism will work. So it addresses multiple problems at the same time, cleans up where the laws on our books are actually going to be enforced. I've always thought that, compared to the immigration for a situation, one of the concerns I've always had about that is we have laws on the books that are not being enforced. and that can lead to lawlessness in other ways. And this is the same thing, and it's been going on for years and years. So one might say we should get rid of the sales tax. I'm certainly not saying that. That would be fair, but that has some other problems. Or we should enforce what's on the books, and that's all this does. So I encourage everybody to vote yes.
Rep. Wilhite in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Clemens, for all the conversations we've had about this bill. A few years ago, I went into small business with a couple other people, and we bought some products, and it came through the Port of Miami, and about 2 years later, we realized, and the Department of Revenue sent us a letter saying that we owed some taxes on that because of it wasn't charged at the time. And so I found out, did some research and stuff on it, and the state is allowed and identifies products coming through ports and across the state line of what is coming to the state where it was not purchased about the sales tax. And I found some really disturbing part about it is the state has up to 3 years to go back to investigate this. And in the meantime, the state charges you an interest rate and a fee while they do that. Well, the state didn't even know that this was going on for 2 of the 3 years that we had purchased this product. And so I had a real concern that the state was charging an interest rate on something that most Floridians were unknown to them, that they owed that sales tax because they bought something, they had it delivered to them. So I appreciate Representative Clemens working on that with me to change a little of that, because I don't think that unbeknownst to Floridians, they should be charged an interest rate for something that they were ignorant of knowing. And I'm not saying ignorant is an excuse, but if you don't know something, how should the state be charging you an interest rate on that? And secondly, I look at this that I'm hoping that, you know, you go into a store and you look at something and immediately you go to your smartphone, you look at where you could buy it cheaper online. The problem is that sometimes is that maybe buying it from that small store owner who bought it or built it in this country or put workers to work could be now maybe be on a better playing field, that you could buy it here, get it right now and take it home with you instead of buying it from another country or somewhere else where that wasn't paid. And so I'm hoping that if this revenue is collected, that it does put our small businesses on a better playing field, or maybe it puts some more people to work in this country that are right here in your stores, because now you can hire some more people because you feel like you're at a better playing field, or on a better playing field. So I'm going to support this because I think it does ultimately long-term have some benefits because, for instance, the people that live near a state line, they might just drive across a state line and buy it somewhere in another state and just bring it back. And so I'd really like to encourage people to buy things in this state or in this country that are built and produced in this country and help our businesses. And I'm hoping that this revenue will offset some other areas to help all Floridians. And obviously, I spoke a few minutes ago about unemployed ones. They're as important as the business owner. But we need to make sure both of those people are able to work and prosper. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Rep. Maggard in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And also, thank you very much for this bill, and I want to and Rep. Tomko's amendment. Thank you very much for that, Rep. I want to agree a little bit with Rep. Wilhite on this. Being a small business owner, what we need to see is the question is why does a small business owner get this help? But look at all the peripherals that come with it. Where do you go to get your donations from? Where do you go to support Little League? Where do you go to support school functions? Where do you go to afford a lot of your civic activities? It's a small business. I get hit every day of my life. And you know what? Even during COVID, we think it's important. So yeah, small businesses do need help. And Rep, you're right down there. If we can be on an even playing field in my business, 7% on a kitchen that's 10 grand, I lose every time. Now we're going to be on the same playing field, we're good. Guess what I can do? I'll sell more appliances. I'll hire more people. And that's just how simple it is. So thank you all very much for this bill.
Rep. Beltran in debate.
Thank you, Chairman. I just want to talk about two principles behind my support of this bill. The first one was alluded to by Representative Plakin, which is if we have laws, then we ought to enforce them. And if we're not going to enforce them, then we frankly shouldn't have those laws. But that's another issue for another time. Right now, we have a tax. People aren't paying it. We know they're not paying it. And it creates disrespect for the law not to be collecting that tax. And having the out-of-state retailers collect that tax is the most administrable way to do it. The tax is already on the books, and this is not a tax increase. And many retailers are already paying this tax. I came home Friday afternoon after this got agended I told my wife about the bill, and she checked her Amazon receipts, and in fact, we've been paying the tax, which is good. We would have a big liability, given my family's purchases, if we hadn't. So I'm good here, even without the safe harbor that we have in the bill. Second point I want to make, though, is we have essentially put ourselves under a reverse tariff. Why do I say that? What am I talking about? Well, we tax, if I go down the street and buy the pair of running shoes from Rep Plakin's friend, I have to pay the tax on that. If I go order them from out of state, I don't pay the tax on that. Imagine if the situation were reversed. What if we made a rule and we said we're going to tax the out-of-state retailers and we weren't going to tax ourselves? Well, you know what would happen? The case would go up to the Supreme Court if our Solicitor General were dumb enough to defend that statute, and it would get overturned in a heartbeat. It would be a 9-0 decision, and we would be embarrassed. But we're doing it not to out-of-state large retailers. We're doing it to our mom and pops here in Florida. If we tried to do it to anyone else, we'd be laughed out of court, but we've been doing it to ourselves for a very long time. So I'm glad we're fixing this, and I'm glad we're keeping it revenue neutral. Thank you, Chairman.
Rep. Nixon, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I am going to vote up on this bill today. Again, I'm a small business owner as well. However, I've heard everyone say that the small businesses need help. And I just want to reemphasize the fact that our workers need help as well. A speaker got up and spoke earlier in regards to the Sadowski Trust Fund being raided. You know, the reason I have a house is because I was able to tap into that through some programs that were offered in my city. And unfortunately, some people won't be able to do that this year or haven't been able to do it for the past few years because it continually gets raided. And these taxes that are being collected should go to services like that, right? They should go to all types of public services, not simply just to businesses. And so it's really important that we start looking out for workers, for the working class as well, not just us small businesses or big business owners. So thank you.
Any further debate? Any further debate? Members, first, I want to thank Speaker Sprouse, President Simpson, Rep. Clemens, and Rep. Tomko for this bill. This is a big deal, and I think this bill is just in the current state. It's going to do amazing things and help out a lot of Floridians. I know that we've used the word revenue neutral, you know, before, and I said that revenue neutral sort of connotates that it's a prior to that it was a tax increase. It's not. It's a collection issue. So if you hold that it's a collection issue, which I think that we all do, so what we're doing with the money that's coming in and these offsets, now we're talking about offsetting what is probably going to be, not probably, would have been the largest business tax hike in the form of unemployment taxes going up about 700%. And then in addition to that, now with the amendment worked out by the Speaker and President and Rep. Tomko cutting the business rent tax, you're talking about, so if you hold that it's not a tax increase, then what we're talking about here is almost $1 billion tax cut reduction for businesses and small businesses, and especially the small businesses, because they're the ones that are probably going to feel a big portion of this effect. So for the business rent tax, I own a commercial plaza. We collect the business rent and we pass it on. Them not having to pay that will mean that the small businesses in my plaza will have more money to invest, hire people, invest in their business. And that's a good thing, and that's going to spur on economic activity. But the other part where we're not raising the taxes to refill the unemployment trust fund, that is a big deal. Because especially if you're a new business, if you're a new business in the state of Florida, you're paying a rate of about 2.9% on the first $7,000, which means that is an almost onerous amount to start a business. So not having that allows entrepreneurs to get into the marketplace and not have to worry about it and hire people. So this is it's a shot in the arm for businesses, especially small businesses. And I love the amendment. I love where we are right now with this bill. But the big thing is that since we're taking the money and we're offsetting and we're giving it back in forms of tax cuts, it doesn't grow government. It's meant to grow the economy. And when you grow the economy, you're creating jobs. And there's nothing better for somebody who is unemployed than to have a job and earn money and take care of themselves and their family. Right now, we have a 4.7% unemployment rate in the state of Florida. We are leading, and I think we're leading now with this good policy that is before us. So I want to thank you all again. I want to, again, thank the Speaker, the President, you, Rep. Tomko, for this bill. So with that, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Almost to the person, I've probably spoken with everyone here regarding this bill and how to make this bill an even better bill. And I want to thank Rep. Nixon for standing up for what you believe in and your kindness to reach out to me yesterday regarding your three amendments. Thank you. Don't stop doing what you're doing, and I'd like to work with you about some of those issues. Rep. Will Hite, thank you for working with me for the last really 4 months on trying to incorporating some things in here to make this bill even better. My prime co-sponsor, Mr. Chair, Chip LaMarca, we supported this bill last year, and we submitted it last year when it wasn't cool. Okay, so we are persistent in that, and we're here today standing before you saying that the early bird gets the worm, but the second mouse gets the cheese. Let me explain what I mean by that. Had we closed this loophole, had we changed the method of collection in the state of Florida 1, 2, 3 years ago when the Wayfair decision came down, we would not be in this good position today. I would submit to some of the previous speakers about revenue neutrality. Every year, Florida, the state of Florida, because of our good fiscal policy, has revenue neutrality because we balance our budget each and every year. That, ladies and gentlemen, makes Florida business friendly, and we are in fact open for business. Prior to COVID-19, we had a 2.9 unemployment rate, which is full employment. Matter of fact, let me just tell you this. We had more job openings in the state of Florida in 2019 and 20 than we had people applying for jobs in 2019 and 20. We will get there again because of the policies that this legislature and the Florida Senate proffers and the governor signs. We are open for business. We're business friendly, and that's no accident. That's by deliberate choice and deliberate policies. Florida usually has more jobs available. I'm all for that. Fiscal responsibility. As you know, the state of New York has approximately the same number, just a few residents smaller than Florida, and their budget, I will remind everyone, is not above $100 million, it's about $185 billion. So it's almost twice the state of Florida. And it's no wonder that people are moving here at such an alarming rate. Sunny days, ladies and gentlemen, are on our dawn, and it's coming. And we're going to get out of this COVID-19, and thank you for your support. And the prime co-sponsor is going to finish this up, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and members. This bill, as the prime sponsor of this bill said, this is about fairness for our retailers who are trying to compete with foreign and out-of-state businesses. And we know how it works, but members, let me just say this. Eight years as a county commission in Broward County, the People's Republic, I voted for one budget. I voted for one budget because it was fair to the taxpayers. It didn't raise their taxes. So if I thought in any way that this were a tax increase, I would not be standing here. I was not only proud to join my friend, Representative Clemens, on this bill, but I'm more proud and happy to be standing here with Rep. Tom Cow's amendment. And if you think about where you pay probably some of you have a office in a retail shopping center, your district office, state of Florida is going to get a little bit of a discount on their what they're paying out here too. So with that, members, I ask for your favorable support in this great bill.
Having closed on the bill, the question now occurs on PCS for CS for House Bill 15. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Anglia?
Yes.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Wilt Beltran?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
DeSegley?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller is excused. Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure? Nixon?
Yes.
Umphrey?
Yes.
Placon?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Romo?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Slotsberg?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Wilhite?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, show that PCS for CS for House Bill 15 reported favorably with committee substitute. Good job, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee all.
Okay, members, some cleanup from before. So, members, without objection, we are going to show the vote on House Bill 895, nullified. And we will take the vote on House Bill 859, the bill that Rep. Grant had on the expiration of permits and agreements during natural emergencies. That was previously heard, but misidentified by the bill, the incorrect bill number. So right now, we are going to take the roll call on House Bill 859, the one that Rep. Grant introduced. So, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll on House Bill 859.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Wilt Beltran?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
DeSegley?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller is excused. Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Nixon? Umphrey?
Yes.
Placon?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Romo?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Slotsberg?
Yes.
Tomko? Wilhite?
Yes.
Chair Anglia?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, show that House Bill 859 reported favorably. All right, got that one out of the way. So now we are going to go to we're going to take up House Bill 6053 by Rep. Yarborough regarding doorstep waste containers. You're recognized when you get to the podium.
Thank you, Chairman. Good afternoon to you and members of the committee. Thank you for putting House Bill 6053 on your agenda this afternoon. Mr. Chairman and members, the Valet trash industry has been operating for more than 25 years and now services approximately 2 million doors per day in 40 states. In Florida, Valet Trash Service collects from approximately 350,000 doors per day in both apartment and condominium communities. There is a robust competitive marketplace for this service in Florida, supporting approximately a dozen companies and thousands of jobs. Prior to 2018, the industry was largely unregulated, but concerns were raised that the practice could hamper means of egress and corridors. At that time, the industry came together with fire officials and legislation was approved that provided a regulatory framework limiting the size of the container that could be used in both interior and exterior hallways and providing other standards to ensure safety. HB 6053 before you today removes a sunset date from the statute in order to keep the existing regulations permanently in place. Removing the sunset will allow the industry to continue to operate with both certainty and standardized regulations statewide that have proven effective in ensuring the safety of communities while allowing the service to continue. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions of the bill sponsor? Rep. Wilhite, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative. Could you tell me the fire marshal's position on this bill?
For a response.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Wilhite, I believe there's a representative from the fire marshal's service here today who would be more qualified to answer that question directly for you, Representative.
Okay. Are we going to hear from them, Mr. Chairman? Or?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'll yield to them.
Any further questions of the bill sponsor? Any further questions? Showing none, we do have public testimony. Jim Horn, Affinity Waste Solutions.
waiving in support. Jim Milliken, Florida Fire Marshals Association. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members as well. I'm Jim Milliken, representing the Florida Fire Marshals Association, along with Florida Fire Chiefs Association. The storage of combustible materials in egress pathways, such as hallways and balconies, are always a great concern for the safety of building occupants and firefighters responding to the medical and fire emergencies. These practices are code violations due to the risk of fire with a very quick spread potential, and for blocking hazards in the case of medical calls where emergency responders must have the ability to maneuver life-saving equipment. While we are sympathetic to the needs of the convenience that this service provides to our aging population, we're also very concerned about the associated risk of extending the timeline in compliance with the provisions of this service. This timeline was established by the 2018 legislature to allow time for negotiations with the model code communities for placement of a safe practice within the base of the model codes. The time given was 3 years, and that terminates with repeal provision effective July 1st this year. The fire service could very simply back then stated that this practice is dangerous and is a well-established violation of adopted fire and life safety codes. However, we did not. We adapted by working with the industry to develop safeguards so that the industry could continue to provide this valued convenience in a manner acceptable to our code enforcement community at the time. This negotiation was developed on the premise that leadership in the doorstep refuse community would petition the main code promulgators and work to have this allowance placed in the base fire and life safety codes adopted throughout our industry. Their good faith efforts failed in that the members of who make up this committee worldwide did not find a safe solution for this service. As a result, the Florida Fire Code Advisory Council took issue under advisement and placed the provisions currently found in Florida Statute 603 and adopted those criteria as an amendment to the 7th edition of the Florida Fire Prevention Code. The 7th edition came effective January 1st of this year. In conclusion, accordingly, vendors were given this 3-year window to make adjustments to become compliant with the agreed upon criteria. There are a few vendors who have chosen not to comply with these safeguards, while one company, who is the majority stakeholder in this industry, has honored all commitments and made previously. The fire service honored their phase-in period for compliance. By removing the repeal in this amendment in the current the amendment in the current Florida Fire Prevention Code would be removed. Therefore, we ask you to please not move this bad bill forward. Thank you.
Question from Rep. Will Height.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate, obviously, we usually see a lot eye to eye on things. I'm just wondering how this really, because as I understand, this is a very small amount, isolated, contained, and different things, how this really becomes, and it's collected regularly, how it becomes an ongoing fire code outside of their unit now that it's being collected versus what could be collected inside.
For a response.
Well, I think it actually falls down to container size and type of container as well. That's on the outside of the apartment or condominium, what have you.
Okay. And just to clarify, this is the position that was agreed upon and voted on by the Fire Chiefs Association or the Fire Marshal's Office?
It was.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ron Book, Affinity Waste Solutions. Waiving in support, thank you. Kelly Millett, I'm assuming the same, Affinity Waste. Sure. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kelly Millett, Ronald Elbook, PA, representing Affinity Waste Solutions. And just briefly, I did want to touch on the existing statute and the existing regulation, which does, in fact, regulate means of egress. It does address that, and container size is there. So I just wanted to briefly address that, and thank you for your thank you for the time, and I'm available for any questions, of course. Thank you.
Thank you. Showing no further testimony, public testimony, members, we are in debate. In debate on the bill before us. Rep. Will Height in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for obliging me again. Members, obviously, I think I try and look out the most for what's the most conscientious in fire safety issues. But I think we also have to be conscientious of homeowners and work with them and know that if there's things that we can do to make it easier for them and make sure that we have safety measures put in place. You know, there are things where you're not allowed to put things in fire halls, staircases, and store that kind of larger stuff there in long term. But this is a short term thing. It's picked up. But, you know, I think when I originally voted on this bill a few years ago, I think I supported it just because it was that short time frame and small amounts, and it would assist the homeowner in these facilities. And so, therefore, I'm going to continue to support it again this year, this time. And I appreciate the bill sponsor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further debate? Any further debate? Showing none, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Representative Wilhite, for your comments and committee members for your consideration. I would point out that on page 7 of the analysis, it does mention that in the past 3 years since these regulations have been in effect through the statute, that there have not been any incidents or issues that have been cited. And I think the comments that Representative Wilhite have made have amplified the need that we have to do this. And so we certainly don't want to run afoul of anything in our safety code or the fire code as it is today. And we don't believe this would do that, but it would help to make sure we have a level playing field for those out there to provide the service. So with that, I ask for your support. Thank you.
Having closed on the bill, the question now occurs on House Bill 6053. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Wilt Beltran?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller is excused. Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Umpfroy?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Slotsberg?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Wilhite?
Yes.
Wilhite?
Yes.
Cherengolia?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, show that House Bill 6053 reported in favor.
Chairman, committee, thank you.
All right, members, we're going to go on to CSFA House Bill 379 by Rep. Gio Lombardo regarding Public Records Economic Development Agencies. You are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. HB 379 would allow specific information obtained by the Department of Economic Opportunity for applicants in small business loan programs to be exempt from public records. In the past year, there has been an influx of applicants for small businesses loan programs. The information obtained by DEO on applicants for this small business loans are, the information includes their tax returns, financial statements, credit history information. This bill exempts this information to protect the applicant's identity from identity thefts, fraudulent contractors, predatory lenders, individuals seeking to take advantage of the borrower. I also want to note that nothing in this bill prevents the public from seeing who applied and who is getting these small business loans. The other part to the exemption is that whoever prepared the loan, their home address and their contact information would be exempt. That's lawyers, accountants, that type of stuff. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Having explained the bill, any questions of the bill sponsor? Any questions of the bill sponsor? Showing none. Is there any public testimony? Showing no. We'll just double check. No public testimony. Members, we are in debate. In debate on the bill before us. Showing no debate, you are recognized to close.
Wave close.
Having wave close, the question now occurs on CSFA House Bill 379. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Wilt Beltran?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller? Excused. Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Umpfroy?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Placencia? Rodriguez? Rommel? Schoaf?
Yes.
Slotsberg?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Wilhite?
Yes.
Cherengolia?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, show that CSFA House Bill 379 reported favorably.
Thank you.
Good job, sir. Members, we're going to move on to CSFA House Bill 895 by Rep. Stevenson. Sorry, Rep., that we approved your bill earlier in the day that we had to nullify it. You are recognized to explain your bill on consumer finance loans.
Thank you, Chair Angoli, and I appreciate that you tried to speed things along. Thank you, Chair Angolia, Vice Chair Drake, and Ranking Member Silvers for allowing me to present House Bill 895 today. House Bill 895 codifies some best practices for the Florida Statute 516 installment lenders, including establishing a minimum of 6 installments to help ensure the loan payments are more affordable and eliminating and confirming explicitly that prepayment penalties are not allowed. The bill also gives lenders the option of keeping the current $25,000 liquidity requirement per location or using $25,000 surety bonds, certificates of deposits, or letters of credit for each company with $5,000 additional per location. This gives OFR another more stable method to hold licensees accountable and maintain the necessary protections should the lender be subject to an adverse judgment. Providing additional options for licensees such as this can free up capital for lenders to lend to their customers while still ensuring the regulatory safeguards are met. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions of the bill sponsor? Any questions of the bill sponsor? Right. Showing none, Rep. Stevens.
You want to represent
me? No, you good? Having no questions, you are recognized to explain Amendment 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment updates two statutory references relating to the Federal Truth in Lending Act's implementing regulations, commonly referred to as Regulation Z. Rulemaking authority for this regulation was previously under the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. However, Dodd-Frank transferred rulemaking authority to the CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, effective July 21, 2011, so it's a little update.
Having explained the amendment, any questions of the amendment sponsor? All right, showing none, and members without objection. Without objection, members, we are going to show that the bill is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Any questions? Showing none, we're moving into public testimony. Pamela Birch, Fort Florida State Conference of NAACP Branches. Waiving in support. Ingrid Delgado, Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, a proponent of the bill. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members. Ingrid Delgado with the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. And our organization engages in policy regarding small dollar loans because these products can often be used to exploit those on fixed incomes and the working poor. And we believe that there is a balance between an incentive for lending to higher risk underbanked borrowers and not taking advantage of them. And this bill strikes that balance. The term installment loan would presume multiple payments. However, installment lenders in Florida can require one lump sum payment, which often results in borrowers having to reborrow the same principal for additional interest and fees, leading them into a cycle of debt. A lender that secures loans with car titles, even though they're licensed under the installment loan chapter in Florida and not the title loan chapter in Florida, can then repossess the family vehicle on which the borrower depends, making it even more difficult for them to travel to work, and sometimes that vehicle is also their home. An additional concern is current prepayment penalties for those who are able to resolve the debt ahead of time. So we are thankful to Rep. Stevenson for sponsoring this bill to ensure that borrowers are not penalized for a prepayment and also that installment loans can be paid in installments, giving vulnerable consumers an opportunity to have access to capital without being exploited and forced into a cycle of debt. Please support this bill. Thank you.
David Daniel, TMX Finance. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is David Daniel. I'm here representing TMX Finance in the state of Florida. We are a licensed 516 loan lender, consumer finance loans. Members, we have concerns with one section of this bill. It's one sentence dealing with the minimum terms for consumer finance loans. By reference, it's in lines 157 through 159 of the amendment. It requires a 6-month minimum term for these loans. And as you know, consumer finance loans are not for people with stellar credit. In fact, it's for less than stellar credit. The people that have bad credit histories and make a risk for the folks. Members, these consumers that are getting these loans, these are not people that are going to their neighborhood bank. They're not going to the credit union because they aren't going to be offered money, and they don't have those banks and options available. Yet they still have emergency needs, that emergency needs for small dollar loans. Maybe we've been working with the sponsor looking to find a happy middle ground on this issue. We have yet to do that. We think that the limitations in this sentence are best left to the consumer and not for government. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, appreciate the time.
Doreen Barker, AARP, waving in support. And C. Jenkins, Florida Financial Services Association. A proponent.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to speak today on HB 895. My name is Scott Jenkins, and I'm the Executive Director of the Florida Financial Services Association. We are the association of the 516 installment lenders in this state. Our members represent about two-thirds of all the locations in the state. HB 895 by Representative Stevenson is part of our association's efforts to bring modern installment lending best business practices to the Chapter 516 lending laws that have been largely untouched since the 1970s. I will focus on the position of the bill from our previous speaker, instituting the minimum six-month loan term length. Currently, Florida law does not have a statutorily set minimum term length for consumer finance loans, creating a loophole. Chapter 516.36 states, every loan made pursuant to this chapter must be repaid in periodic installments, plural, as nearly equal as mathematically practicable, except that the final payment may be less than the amount to the prior installments for the that's where the remainder that's left. Merriam-Webster's first definition of installment is one of the parts into which a debt is divided when payment is made at intervals. A single balloon payment is not an installment payment under any definition. It has been brought to our attention that a title loan lender has obtained a Chapter 516 consumer finance license and operating under a different business name in Florida to offer what are essentially title loans, generally around $1,100 and up to $2,500 with single payment, 1 month term lengths that are collateralized with car titles. These suspicious installment loans products are not available in other states. Currently, because of the nature of their products, title loan lenders are prohibited from charging fees and selling or force placing insurance under their governing statutes, Chapter 537. In order to get the economic profits they see in other states where interest rates are much higher for title loans than they are here in Florida, these title lenders have obtained a Chapter 516 license and opened branches in Florida under a different business name to be able to offer title loans masquerading as installment loans in order to charge fees and force their customers to purchase insurance. There is little to no underwriting or researching a customer's ability to repay. The loan, other than ensuring that 80% of the car's value that is up for collateral covers the loan. A credit report is ordered in order to charge the state allowed investigation fee, but seldom analyzed. Borrowers seldom have collision insurance and are forced to find insurance. Many settle for the insurance sold by the lender due to the customer's need for the funds and time constraints of the customer. Traditional installment loan lenders work with their customers to plan term lengths that best suit their customers' abilities to repay. For example, the state's largest installment lender has an average loan amount between $8,000 and $9,000 with an average term length of 56 months. The installment lending statute was originally created with the intent to have loans repaid in multiple loan installments. The six-month minimum term prescribed will also better help our customers to be able to improve their credit scores. There has been no official interpretation or ruling from any court, regulator, or administrative body that has contradicted the language in the installment lending statute or what can be derived from a plain reading of the text. HB 895 clarifies the intent of the statute and closes a loophole that is being used by a single licensee. While the opponents of the bill may allege that the purpose of the bill is to decrease competition, an industry is only as good as its worst actor. True installment lenders under Chapter 516 do not offer single payment, 1 month term loans collateralized with car titles. But we do offer the same size loan with multi-month installments. HB 895 would not impair a title loan company from obtaining the appropriate license in Chapter 537 to make the same size loans being offered today. The separation of loan types in individual statutory chapters is designed to allow appropriate regulation and enforcement for different loan industries. A single company exploiting a loophole in a statutory framework should not be the basis for impeding improvement in a statute used by an entire industry. Thank you for your time. I'm here for any questions if you need to ask.
Thank you, sir. Showing no further public testimony, members, we are in debate. In debate on the bill before us. Showing no debate. Rep. Stevenson, you are recognized to close on CS for House Bill 895.
Chair Angolia, thank you for hearing the bill, and I want to thank the people who came and could fill out the some of the issues, and I waive close. Thank you, Chair.
Having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll on the real CS for House Bill 895.
Thank you. Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Wilt, Beltran?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
DeSegley?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller is excused. Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Plakin? Placencia?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Romo? Schoaf?
Yes.
Slotsberg?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Will Height?
Yes.
Jerangolia?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, show that CS for House Bill 895 reported favorably with committee substitutes.
Thank you.
Members, we're going to move on to the last bill on the agenda, CS for House Bill 619 by Rep. Barnaby regarding public records application for a de novo banking charter. You are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Currently, when an application is filed for the formation of a de novo bank, most of the application is public record, with only certain redactions allowed. HB 619 will allow the application information to be protected during the application phase. In order to protect the details of the application that could hamper organizing groups' ability to recruit and hire key employees who may not wish to have public disclosure of their intent to join a group that is in organization due to the negative impact it could have on their current job. Without passing this bill, organizing groups are hesitant to disclose the identity of certain key officers at the beginning of the application process, which can complicate the regulatory approval process. Therefore, the removal of this barrier will allow the OFR to better and more expediently evaluate the applications. That's the bill.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions of the bill sponsor? Any questions of the bill sponsor? Showing none, do we have any public testimony? We do. Jeremy Smith, OFR, a proponent of the bill, waiving its support. Thank you. Showing no other public testimony, members, we are in debate. In debate on the bill before, showing no debate. Rep. Barnaby, you are recognized to waive close.
Waive close, Mr. Chairman.
Having waived close, the question now occurs on CS for House Bill 619. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Wilt Beltran?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
DeSegley?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller is excused. Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Romo? Schoaf?
Yes.
Slotsberg? Tomko?
Yes.
Will Height? Jerangolia?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, show that CS for House Bill 619 reported favorably. Good job, sir. Members, that is it for today's committee agenda. I want to thank you for your indulgence today. If there is no further business, Rep. Daly moves that we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.